From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on the night before the NFL draft last Thursday. All of a sudden, the fairy tale story of a kid from a small town turned dark. Josh Allen had grown up dreaming of playing football, but the kid with a strong arm couldn't get the big universities to pay attention to him. He sent letters, tried to get scholarships. Almost no one called him back. Wyoming did. He went out to prove that the other schools were wrong about him. And last week it was all set up, improbably. Josh Allen was in the mix to be the number one player selected in the NFL draft. But then the night before the draft, someone found Allen's old tweets. When Allen was in high school, he wrote racist tweets on multiple occasions. He used the N-word multiple times, and he tweeted at one point, "If it ain't white, it ain't right." He used slurs that demean gay people, and he wrote homophobic tweets. Now, Allen apologized, saying that he had changed, that he was never serious about that, he was sort of a dumb kid. And the next day, Allen was picked 7th overall by the Buffalo Bills. The Bills have said they talked to Allen about his past. They're comfortable that his tweets do not represent who he truly is. But this sad tale brings up several questions, and we're going to key in on two of them this hour. First, what should job applicants do with their old social media postings? And second, should employers consider what someone said online when they were 15, 16, or 17 years old? And are there even any legal implications there? My guests this hour include, on the phone with us, Jeff DeVeronica, sports writer for the Democrat and Chronicle, who wrote a piece almost 4 years old now that still feels very, very relevant called One Bad Tweet. You can't get away from that one, can you, Jeff?
No, it's as prevalent now as it was back then, and more so even now with people... I mean, Evan, it's like people go searching to try to for the skeletons in people's social media closet. It's kind of sad to a degree, but it's definitely should be a really stark reminder to every teenager out there, every person really, that people are watching, and you can't really shut the door on it. Once it's out there, it's kind of out there.
Yeah, is it ever. Scott Maloof is here. He's an attorney whose practice is focused on the intersection of social media and the law. Scott, welcome back.
Thanks, Evan.
And Lori Enright is a placement director for AP Professionals. She told me before the hour began that people would know it simply as a headhunter, even though the term is a little gauche. But yeah, that's what you do.
It is exactly what I do.
All right. And you work with people from all age ranges, but a lot of younger job applicants, yes?
Many millennials, yes.
All right, good. Well, thank you for being here. I appreciate
it. Thank
you. I'm going to start with Jeff. Your time's a little more limited, Jeff, and I want to kind of do two things here. First, you're covering the Buffalo Bills. I mean, you're somebody who's followed the Bills and Western New York sports. And I wonder if the night before the draft, when all this stuff hit on Josh Allen, it wasn't clear at that point where he was going to go, if the Bills were going to try to move up and get him, which they eventually did. Did you think, boy, this could really blow up on him? Did you think that teams weren't going to be bothered? And what do you make of what the Bills have said?
Well, I think it did blow up on him a little bit. I think, and it did come out a little sooner than that. I mean, it was really the entire day before the draft. A lot of this was focused on what he had tweeted so long ago. And you know, one thing I want to make really clear is, not to condone what he tweeted or what anyone would tweet, but he's a teenager. He was a teenager back then, and kids make mistakes. And the difference between you and I, Evan, and maybe some other panelists, is, well, we made a mistake. Maybe five of our friends heard it. And now kids make a mistake on social media, and thousands of people can see it, and you're in big trouble. So, I think it may have cost them, being drafted a little higher. The Bills said they did their due diligence and immediately made some phone calls and talked to the right people, and they were assured that this is not who this young man is now. It may have been just kid foolery in a very, very sad way.
I want to jump in and listen to a little bit of what Josh Allen said about all of this on draft night. He talked to Susie Culber of ESPN. Let's listen to that now.
All right, Josh, the tweets that you sent out when you were in high school characterized as racially insensitive. When you wrote those words, what did they mean to you?
Well, I mean, if you look back at it, I didn't write a lot of those words. Obviously, we were young and dumb. I was, 15, 16 years old at the time. And, I never realized that could hurt me 6 years down the line. So I want to be used, as a example for, kids that are 15, 16, that some things can come up to you and reach you 6 years later. I'm extremely sorry for what happened. I own it. And there was no you know, malintentions with those tweets, and I'm sorry, and I apologize, and I'm very emotional about it, and I don't want to get choked up right now, but it's been a tough day, but I'm here now with my family, got a really good support cast. All my teammates reached out to me. They know who I am. They understand what's going on here. Man, it sucked. You know, it left a pit in my stomach. I couldn't sleep very well last night. Just knowing that, you know, where I'm at today, the platform that I have, the example that I can set for younger kids, that's not the way I want to be remembered. So I'm not going to let this, you know, define me. Whatever team I go to, I'm going to give them everything, show them the type of character that I am. Because, like I said, my teammates from the past know exactly who I am as a person. They can vouch for me. And I love those guys, man.
Is that good enough for you, Jeff?
I think it is. I mean, you could tell he was a little coach. He was coached on what to say. I'm really getting tired of the phrase "I own it" now. People think they say that, and that everything's going to be washed away. And you know, I'm not going to let this define me. It was a little contrite to a degree, or contrived, I should say. But you know, to a degree, Evan, I think in a way it almost shows the Bills this kid's intestinal fortitude to stand up to adversity. Because you're going to be called as a professional athlete, you know, you're the next play away from being the center of a controversy. So to a certain degree, this may have helped them say, you know what, we believe him, and look at the way he's handled it. This is our guy. In addition to the skill set he brings as a quarterback, that this is the guy we want. So in that regard, it may have helped convince the Bills that this kid was the right guy. So. You know, we'll see how it plays out. We don't know. We have no crystal ball, but it was good enough, and I don't think he's a good enough actor. I mean, the kid, I really think he was sincere in his emotion. And I've also read some stuff since then, Evan, about this young man, when one of his African-American teammates needed a place to stay, he was the first one that said, "You can crash on my couch. I'm here for you." And I just don't think a young man who's racist would do that.
Well, here's Rochelle Riley writing in the Detroit Free Press. I'm going to quote from her response to all of this. She writes, quote, "Josh Allen was old enough to know right from wrong when he posted those tweets. But the reason this kind of behavior should not be ignored or tolerated or understood is because doing any of those things continues to make it okay for the next kid, who can later say he was just dumb to spew racist filth or post himself standing with a sign saying, 'If I was black, I'd be picking cotton, but I'm white, so I'm picking you for prom.' Yep, Noah Crowley, an 18-year-old at Riverview High School in Sarasota, Florida, did that too. And like Allen, he'll be defended by those who think that hateful kids should be forgiven because, aw, they didn't mean any harm. They're young. They're used to saying anything on social media. Well, why should we be understanding of insensitive and racist young adults? They will never be accountable until we hold them accountable. How do they learn accountability? I'm not suggesting beheading, but there should be more than a 'gee, I'm sorry.' Josh Allen owes more than an apology. He owes those who gave him a pass a chance to see how he's grown. He could show other high schools and college students a different way to be, and he should consider on his own doing a little community service or writing an essay for a national magazine, anything that can serve to show others that such behavior will not be tolerated or excused." End quote. What do you think, Jeff?
Completely agree. That's great. But, I mean, let's let it play out here. I mean, I don't – we all make mistakes in life. I think she's being quite judgmental, and I'm sure at some point people might go scurrying through her social media to see if – and they probably already have after she wrote what she wrote. I mean, you know, if we can give Bill Clinton the forgiveness that he was given in this country, hang a 14-year-old, 15-year-old kid for retweeting some really racially insensitive lyrics. I just don't think it should ruin his life. I think it would be great if he did more than just say, "I'm sorry." But I just don't think it should just ruin the kid's life. The young man, he's a young man. I agree. Kids should know right from wrong, certainly now, even more so than 5 years ago. But I think that's a little too judgmental. I mean, I'm a big proponent of "Let he without sin cast the first stone," and apparently she's never sinned. So,
Lori Enright, placement director for AP Professionals. What side do you fall on this there? I mean, you work with employers who want talented people, and of course they're going to be seeing some things on social media, some things they may not like, but Rochelle Riley's writing in the Detroit Free Press that just saying "I'm sorry" is not good enough, that this is revelatory of character, and employers are going to consider it as such.
Employers are going to consider it for sure, and as they get more savvy, we'll say, in researching candidates prior to bringing them in, it would probably keep some candidates from getting in the front door in the first place. So it might just eliminate that person from consideration altogether. It's when they haven't done their homework and they get in there, now how do they react to it? How do they respond to it? If they decide to do that homework during the process, do they eliminate that person from consideration and tell them? But I do think that there is, in this circumstance that we're talking about, I think that window of 6 years certainly should come into play. We have employers that do the social media search prior to bringing candidates in. We have had clients that have rescinded an offer after seeing, I recall it, it was someone's post on, this is a ways back, MySpace, and it was a quote from a Homer Simpson quote, and it was basically talking about laziness. And as soon as they saw that quote, they said, yeah, we don't really want that candidate. So it can come in at all sorts of times. But I think when we are talking about a maturity level of 16 years old versus an adult that's already, you know, kind of exposed to the real world, there is a bit of difference there. I wouldn't want to punish someone for something that they said back then either and say, well, I don't want to hire that person, but certainly I'm going to be digging a lot deeper.
Okay. Yeah. And boy, MySpace, that's taking us back. It's like I know. Throwback Thursday.
Right.
Talking about MySpace. Scott, in the second half hour, we're going to talk a little bit more about what the law says and doesn't say about all of this. But what's your first take on all of this, doing the work that you do with the intersection of social media and the law and the Josh Allen story? Probably not a surprise that somebody in the high profile world ends up caught a little bit.
Oh, this is very common where before an interview, a journalist or someone may go back and look at materials. You know, Joy Reid just had this issue come up. You know, she's relatively high profile. And so this is a pretty common thing. But one thing I want to say is the real frustrating part, and I think Jeff hit on this, is social is very decontextualizing. You're looking at a few messages, a few posts. Josh Allen apparently had 9,000 posts. And it doesn't give us a sense of what does he do with the rest of his time. And he talked about that. You know, my teammates, what have I done? So I think the real challenge here is, as Lori mentioned, you know, employers are looking at that one slice, but is it giving us a full sense of who the person is and what they do? And that's the real problem. If the social companies can't figure that out, then I think you're going to see more and more people say, I need to walk away from this because the costs are too high.
Yeah. And so I'm going to turn back to Jeff because you wrote a piece back in 2014 called One Bad Tweet. One bad tweet can be costly to a student athlete. And if you could, why don't you tell our listeners who haven't read the piece the story of Scott Fitch and what he had found out. The way you led that piece, I thought that was a great example of how shocking, but how serious just one bad tweet can be for a kid, for a student.
This is back in 2013. Scott Fitch is the longtime Fairport basketball coach. And he had two of his athletes were being recruited by the same college program. And he thought they were both pretty equal in talent. The recruiter calls him up and says, we're going to keep recruiting one young man, but we're not going to recruit the other one. And Scott's like, so why? He's done everything the other one has done. He has a good skill set. Why aren't you going forward with this young man? So we went back to the social media and we saw some stuff we didn't like. I think it might have been racial stuff. It might have been some sort of references to drugs or alcohol, and they didn't like it. So they basically said, we don't want them part of our program, so we're going to stop recruiting them. And Scott was so alarmed by that, he's the one that went out and sought out and went through the young man's social media and wanted to find out what the kid did wrong. And he said, geez, if this is really ripping opportunities away from my young men, I need to really coach them on this and tell them that this is very dangerous. You could lose an opportunity for a scholarship because of this. And that kind of started him on the road now to being one of the nation's leading speakers on the dangers of social media. He does like a 45-minute presentation. He's presented to more than 500 times in the past 4 years. And he's done it for maybe, I think, probably more than a couple hundred high schools in the region. He's presented it to the state athletic directors convention with hundreds of administrators listening on how schools need to, and I tell you what, Evan, almost every school now has a social media policy as part of their code of ethics for students, not just athletes, just students. And, you know, the bullying happens. And the last anecdote I'll tell you about Scott is as he started doing these presentations more and more, something else happened. And one of his players, the night of his last game of his high school career at home, senior night, couldn't make it to the game. And Scott got a text from, I think, a parent said, so-and-so can't make it to the game. We're headed to the hospital. Something's happened to his sister. Something bad, really bad. And I think they may have even said it. So Scott walks into the – and so Scott goes to the hospital to find out what's happened with his player. And his player's sister has committed – she committed suicide. And Scott said he knew it when he saw the kid's face. And the young woman apparently was bullied on social media. And Scott, being inquisitive about what, you know, caring and being inquisitive, said, I wanted to go that night and see what happened. I wanted to see what bullying looked like to me. What were kids doing to her that pushed her off a cliff? And Scott said, and he says this to hundreds of kids all the time now. Didn't look like bullying to Scott Fitch. Didn't think it was that bad. Scott Fitch didn't think it was that bad. But he said, you know what? People have to understand when they're sending out mean tweets or Facebook posts or comments and threads, it's not how you see it. It's how the receiver sees it. And that young woman wasn't strong enough to handle it. And it pushed her to suicide. It contributed to her committing suicide. And that's a very important message in all this. It's not how you feel. It's how it makes the other person feel and what kind of state of mind they're in. Mm. And it's really sad, but I mean, bullying goes on. The whole genesis of the story was I saw some kids talking trash about a ball game that night on social media. A football player saying, "You can't," a wide receiver saying, "You can't cover me tonight." And they were going back and forth. I'm like, man, that's how quickly it can escalate. One morning of a football game.
You know, but this is one concern I would have about the idea that the receiver is the one who sets the messages. I think in a small community, in a high school where people know each other and see each other, that's a standard that may be workable. But a concern I would have is that can shut down a lot of valid criticism, especially amongst of politicians or of companies. So I think we have to be really careful to say the receiver gets to define the message, especially as social moves so quickly and you can have memes that morph very quickly and become a different thing. So I think we want to use that metric very carefully. Mm.
And Jeff, before we let you go, One Bad Tweet's a piece that has a lot of different layers to the risks on social media, but I just wanted to ask you about one particular part of this, which is that you write that many parents now have Twitter accounts just to spy on their kids' online activity. And you say Penfield girls soccer coach Libby Tobin doesn't worry about that much, but she said she can sense when something's going on among her players that might become a problem. So she'll remind them and say, hey, I don't want to hear about anything on Twitter. You know, so there's these overt messages from coaches or parents, but there's also an idea that parents are saying, I have to at least know what they're posting so I'm not going to be caught surprised in the future. Do you think that's wise?
I do. Yeah. I mean, yeah. And now it's not just Twitter. It's Instagram. It's, you know, now they've moved away from if it started at Facebook, then I went to Twitter because everyone was on Facebook. And now with parents on Twitter, kids have gone to Instagram. They're playing a game of dodgeball to stay away and stay kind of hidden so they can have their freedom online. And nothing Scott Fitch said, and this is important, I think, for parents and for coaches and anyone really, you know, you could tell your student athlete, you could tell your son or daughter, I want you off social media, period. And that's not going to really solve the problem. He said that's the equivalent now of this day and age saying go sit in the corner and don't ever play with your friends. Or you're basically virtually grounded, right? Because nowadays, this is how people communicate a lot on social media. That's how they interact. So if you sentence your kid to no social media, I mean, I'm sure maybe there's a, you know, for 48 hours, I don't want to see you on social media. I'm sure that you can be grounded virtually, but in a way, it's almost they might rebel even more. So I do think it's prudent for parents to get on social media and then have accounts to kind of monitor what their kids are doing. I know it happens. I have family members that do it with their children. I don't see anything wrong with that. I just don't. You know, the way things can escalate in this world, and you know, with people out there. I mean, I'm not saying be afraid of the sky falling, but if kids are putting the wrong thing out there, be it pictures or words. It's not uncommon to have some weirdo seek them out and try to meet with them. I mean, we've seen that happen way too often.
All right, Jeff, last thing on Twitter. By the way, we communicate all the time on Twitter on this program, and you can find us there. Matthew writes to us on Twitter and says, Evan, what I'm hearing from Josh Allen is, I'm sorry that people saw it and it put me at a disadvantage, not I'm sorry that I said it. I've learned why it is wrong, and I recognize my hate towards other people. I wouldn't write Josh Allen off, but he needs to learn. Daniel writes to us on Twitter and and says, can racial insensitivity honestly be considered a mistake? How many times? Is the fifth N-word still a mistake? Holding those views says something about you. Laundry detergent in the dishwasher, that's a mistake. Racism is a belief system. So that's two bits of feedback there from listeners. And Jeff, I wonder if you think, you know, there's something.
What do we do? Do we damn him for life now? And what's the cost? I mean, who determines what the cost is? I can bet that his endorsement deals aren't going to be what they may have been. I mean, yeah, everybody looks at things differently. I'm not defending him completely. But, you know, I have colleagues that have gotten in trouble because of their Twitter rants. And, you know, people need to, hey, look at, you know, the whole thing, the title of Scott Fitch's post, his presentation is called Pause Before You Post. And I guess that's the message. I just don't think it should cost a young man every opportunity the rest of his life. But, you know, let's also look, someone else, a buddy of mine, Carl Falk, who has a radio show, said, let's look at where this young man was raised. Not to defend his position and what he did, but he was raised in a community that had some diversity, maybe not as much as it could have helped him see a bigger picture of the world. So I guess I'm not as vicious as some people. I've worked alongside one of my colleagues is African American. He's my best partner at the paper. And, we treat each other just like everyone else. And if a 14 or 15-year-old kid makes a mistake, I don't think it should define the rest of his life. That's just my opinion. If it happens again and again and again, absolutely. But not one moment.
Jeff DeVeronica is a reporter with the Democrat and Chronicle, the author of One Bad Tweet. We'll post that so you can check it out and share it because it is sort of a timeless piece, amazingly. It's almost 4 years old, but still being shared far and wide. Jeff, thanks for the time. I know you got a split. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, everybody. Appreciate it.
All right, so let's do this. You've heard some different angles and different views of this. We're going to talk about what employers really do say and what their expectations are. We're going to talk about whether you can sort of scrub up your social media or nuke it. A lot of people are saying, how in the world did Josh Allen's agent not nuke all of these things before the NFL draft? But then there are other questions as well. You know, legally, can an employer say, we've already hired you, but now we're firing you? Well, that happened. There's been a number of times it's happened, but even in some high-profile cases, we'll talk about those. And we'll take some of your phone calls or comments if you want to keep sending us what you think on this. 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. We're coming right back. Coming up in our second hour, kind of a near miss with an unidentified space object went hurtling by Earth, and we didn't have all that long to prepare for it. It didn't hit us, but it could have. There's lots of those things out there, and in the scientific community, they're talking about whether we should be investing more money to prepare for it. It's only about stopping the extinction of the human species, after all. So where's the science today? We'll explore it next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. We're going to take some of your phone calls and tweets in a moment, and we'll remind you, we're talking about pitfalls of social media. One of the highest profile athletes in the country right now is the new Buffalo Bills quarterback, Josh Allen. And the night before the NFL draft last week, someone dug up a lot of his old tweets from when he was 15, 16, 17 years old. Some racist comments, homophobic stuff. And Josh Allen has said that it was a mistake and that he apologized for that, but that's not who he is. And the Buffalo Bills say they have talked to him and they are comfortable with that. But it could have cost him, and it probably could cost him endorsement deals and more. We're talking about what we should know, especially what our kids should know, growing up in the age now of social media. I want to say hello to our producer, Megan Mack, because, just a brief interruption, we are on day four, the second last day, the penultimate day of our spring membership campaign, and we have a long way to go if we're going to reach our goal. Hi, Megan.
Hi, Evan. Yeah, some bad news. We're behind in our goal right now, so it's important for us to reach out to you and ask for your help. If you're enjoying this conversation today on Connections or the conversations we have every day on this program from noon to two, those are possible because of you and your neighbors who took the time to call 454-6300. We have some volunteers helping us out for the week, and they're spending their time here answering your calls, making it quick and easy for you to pledge your support to WXXI and help us keep these conversations going. Evan and I have been talking a lot lately on the show about the importance of community conversations. And when we think about the types of shows that we want to book for Connections, we're responding to the news cycle, we're responding to requests from listeners, feedback from listeners. This is a story that you've heard in the news very frequently over the past few days, and it's something that you as listeners have expressed interest in. So we're including your comments on social media today, your phone calls. We have Monty waiting on the line, and we'll hear from more of you, I'm sure. But we are here because of you. So to help us keep doing this, 454-6300. And for everyone who has called so far, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Megan. Let's start with Monty in Rochester, because he's got a question that I think both of our guests can probably weigh in on. Go ahead, Monty.
Thank you. I have a rather unusual spelling of my name. However, there's someone else that spells their name the same way. I'm a male. This person is a female, you know, political activist, singer, songwriter. So there's social media like crazy about her. There is zero about me. I'm wondering how to handle that in the context of something like a job interview or any similar situation.
Where someone might think it's you doing something?
Yeah. If I go in for an interview, or if I'm calling for an interview and they want to know what's this all about.
Okay, you know, well,
would I be looked down on or something like that?
Yeah, the good news, I would think, let me turn it over to our guests. First of all, I think the good news for Monty is if it's a well-known person, he's going to be very safe there, because it will be easy for him to explain that that is not me. If it's less well-known but the same spelling, Lorianne Wright, what would you say to Monty?
I would say, I'm hoping, first of all, the prospective employer asks you the question, and I think it would be pretty easy to defend that that's not you. And there's always some history on the Twitter feed or whatnot that should link them back to that person's profile. And I think there's easier ways to connect the dots. Yeah. I mean, that would be someone that's really just seeing something. Maybe they're doing a search and they just see one tweet or whatnot, and they haven't gone to the background information.
Okay. Yeah. Scott?
Oh, I would throw out a couple of things. I mean, the big thing to me would be if you feel like it's worth it, you can create your own LinkedIn profile and put your picture up there. Because, you know, employers tend to go there at least to understand who you are. They're going to look at other spaces possibly, but at least that can have someone who is doing the Google search say, oh, there are two people with this name. I'm interested in this man, not this woman who's a political activist with the same name.
Okay. Monty, I think for the most part, you're going to be in the clear here, because there may be a misunderstanding or two, but it's probably the kind of thing that can get cleared up pretty well. Rusty in Rochester next. Go ahead, Rusty.
Yeah. Hi, Evan. Before the break, you mentioned that there was, or you asked that, would an employer get rid of an employee, or would they even bother hiring them if they had something, some kind of negative blemish in their past? And I think about the case, I don't remember all the facts, but I think about the case of a cop that shot a man a few years ago somewhere west of us. And he wasn't fired for the shooting. He was fired due to some impropriety he had with a previous police department that he worked for. And I thought that was very interesting and telling of our issues with race and cop shootings. I don't follow sports, but I do know a little bit about the Bills. And I think it's also interesting that there was another Bills player that was transferred from Miami, and I believe it was one, he was with Miami, Richie Incognito, that had some issues with race. So I just wanted to bring up those two points because I thought it was kind of interesting. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks very much. Well, employers obviously are going to consider this stuff. The question, I think, becomes just how strenuously, how seriously. Lori Enright is a placement director for AP Professionals. Is it every candidate now has to be ready? I mean, are there any employers who aren't looking into this now?
There are fewer and fewer every day. I would, you know, in Rochester, we have a lot of small employers, and you just don't know the dynamics of that office space, we'll say. So the sophistication of the hiring managers comes into play. But yes, I think everyone needs to be prepared for it. We counsel our candidates because we meet with them first. We counsel them and warn them and ask them to be sure that their social media is cleaned up. And actually, we go through a little search before they come in to meet us as well. Because do we want to represent a candidate that is a risk? So everyone's doing it.
Okay. Scott Maloof?
I just want to chime in, though, to build on the idea that everyone's doing it. For employers out there, before you go on and do this, be aware there are several risks. First of all, social media is very content rich. So think of the traditional job interview. You get the resume. You know, maybe you meet with the person or not meet with the person. You're supposed to be looking at those characteristics related to the job. You go on social media, you now may be getting a bunch of characteristics that don't have anything to do with the job and can open you to an employment discrimination claim, such as, you know, someone's race, somebody's gender, things like that. So you got to be very careful about that, because now you have information that in the days of paper you may not have had. So you want to think about that. Two, if you hire someone, there's a statute called the Fair Credit Reporting Act, and that kicks in as well. And social media searches are generally covered. So you've got to be very careful, because you may be 3 years down the road, have a bunch of people you've rejected for legitimate reasons, but your process was flawed. And so you've opened yourself up to a claim.
But when you go back to that being discriminated against or whatnot, and not getting the job because you have a poor social media presence, we'll call it that. If someone submitted an application and the hiring HR people are doing that social media search, then they just put them in the no pile without any, you know, thank you for your application. We found other candidates that are better suited for our opportunity. I mean, isn't the onus on the prospective employee to research that? I mean, how does that come back to the employer?
I think it all depends on their process. So in the sense of, you know, the best practices advice that we give people is to say the person who looks at social should not be the person making the employment decision or making the go forward decision, because then the person with a really rich profile cannot be said to have used something improper, age, gender, etc. Whereas if you have an employer who does everything themselves, the boss wants to look, the coworkers want to look, and they make those employment decisions, then now you're off to the races, because the person may say, well, I have 10 other friends who also applied. They've got similar characteristics. Now we're going to talk. So that's why I'm saying it's the lesson, the takeaway for people is, in the electronic world, it's about process. It's much more complex than it would have been when you just had pieces of paper.
Absolutely. I totally agree there.
All right, let me get Betsy in Brighton next on the phone. Betsy, go ahead.
Hi. My thought is, how would this young man have been treated if he were black, if he had posted anti-white commentary? Colin Kaepernick has been blacklisted essentially from the NFL for making a show of respect for Black Lives Matter. And when people say, oh, he made a mistake and he should be forgiven, well, yes, true, but many black young men make mistakes as youths and are put in prison for many, many years. But nobody offers them that opportunity to ask for forgiveness. And personally, I think that a 16, 17, 18 year old is really old enough to know better. So I agree with the person who said this isn't a mistake, this is a lifestyle attitude problem.
Betsy, thank you for the phone call, and I'm really glad you brought that up. This is just happens to be one of those programs where we reached out to a wide range of people in our community. All of the guests on this program this hour happen to be white, and so that conversation that Betsy brings up, you know, what happens if this situation were reversed with Josh Allen and looking at Colin Kaepernick, it's probably its own separate discussion, but I think the question is absolutely valid, and the point well taken, Betsy, and I'm glad that you made it. Thank you for that. I want to get Dan's email. Dan emails the program to say, what do you think about applying Miranda rights to social media? Social media has power behind it. It allows people, especially youth, to interject words, thoughts, and ideas into a world they simply have not interacted with. The experience gap is a gaping chasm, but that doesn't stop the internet from carrying what's said across that chasm. Cue unintended consequences. Furthermore, in my opinion, pubescent boys have a kind of acute dementia that results in poor decisions and unbelievable, if not nonsensical, choices. We all did or said things that we could not sensibly explain or justify with reason. Not to excuse the behavior, but parents, coaches, etc., need to figure out a way to communicate how volatile social media is. And kids need to have things clearly explained, including but not limited to the fact that there is no such thing as privacy online. Anything you say online can and will be used against you. Maybe that would help. From Dan. Scott, Miranda writes for social media.
I love the term, but I got to tell you, about a million marketers just shuddered when he said Miranda writes for social, because the point of social is it's very easy. You can sign up so quickly. It's incredibly mobile friendly. It's on your phone, and it's about connecting with other people. For example, Facebook is now running commercials talking about, we've had these problems in the past, but if we can do things better going forward, we're going to do this. And they're showing you pictures of people with kids and babies. So one, I think that although that's a really interesting concept, I think the companies themselves would not be in favor of it. But two, you know, we can't pretend that somehow we can put these magic lenses on. People use their devices when they're tired, when they're frustrated, when they want to connect with other people. I don't think something like a Miranda Wright would work. And frankly, you know, that's one of the challenges when we talk about, you know, be aware every single thing you post can become a problem. I don't think that is a very effective standard, because standards also change. You know, you may have something that comes back that you thought it was okay 5 years ago, and it isn't now. And the example I give people is the NRA, where you've got people saying, why are you having these relationships with the NRA post-Parkland, where 5 years ago, that kind of mental screen wouldn't have existed.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think with social media, even though people don't always think about it, I mean, the comment of prepubescent boy, I have a soon-to-be 21-year-old, and the things I've seen on social media when I've had to have those heart-to-heart talks, come on, are you crazy? Why are you putting those things out there? But I think it's an education process, but people are still going to speak out of turn. We've all done it at some point in time, whether it's on social media or it's face-to-face. How many times have people, you know, put their foot in their mouth? So it's going to exist regardless. I don't think putting more rules around it is going to change what really shows up there.
Yeah, and this also is a talk, you know, question about standards, because, you know, you can't pretend there's one standard online. There's probably hundreds or thousands, you know, and something that we would say not appropriate at work, maybe perfectly appropriate at home, or you may have, you know, when you really start digging into it, different languages, different memes and things that you don't even understand. It's a lot like modern art, where, you know, someone who really gets it, and someone who walks in and looks and says, I don't understand this piece at all.
Let me get a couple other emails here. Barbara writes to us and says, there should be an expectation that Josh Allen publicly make amends to the community and speak out against prior bad behavior on social media. So Barb is saying essentially what Rochelle Riley in the Detroit Free Press said, which is, don't just apologize, an expectation to do some community service here. And Ruth sees an opportunity here. Ruth writes an email that says, the guy who commented that racism isn't a mistake but a belief system had a good point. But to add to that thought, racism is learned. So if Josh Allen is racist, wouldn't the best way for him to unlearn racism be to play closely on a team with a lot of black people? If he does unlearn it, it seems like a good opportunity to create a spokesperson for an end to racism. That's from Ruth in Rochester. And I don't disagree with that, Ruth. In fact, for me, that recalls to mind a piece that I read by Freddie DeBoer called Planet of Cops. And I don't bring this up to endorse the piece wholesale, but it was interesting. He was a longtime libertarian writer who's actually taking a break from social media for mental health reasons, interestingly enough. But Freddie wrote a piece saying he's tired of people just trying to find something that you said in your past to play gotcha, to prove that you're not pure and that you need to be called onto the carpet and to make amends for it. And I'm not fully there, but there are times where I think there is a bit of a performative aspect of this where we just want to mock or demean someone as opposed to saying, have you learned? Can you change? What's the capacity for change? And if Josh Allen can change, and I'm with Ruth, can become a real advocate for anti-racism effort, to own, to go back to what Jeff said, to really own past behavior, I think there could be an opportunity there if we get beyond just the whole shaming aspect of it. So we'll see.
And let's, you know, talk about that gotcha aspect, especially in the employment context. It's a real problem because if our default is, oh, someone said something on social media or someone posted a blog and we don't like it and we are firing them, you know, as an employer, you're not really connecting with the issue. You're just moving on. and that's all you've done. And secondly, what is to happen with that person? You know, we can't send everyone to Elba the way was done with Napoleon, because eventually he escaped and he went back to France. And I think that's what you have to think about, is you cannot just look at these situations and say, nope, this person is awful and they're done. You have to really think about the situation and say, what is the appropriate, you know, response of the community, the various communities, and how can this person interact? And also, what are their strengths and weaknesses? You know, for example, Josh Allen talked about, these are my teammates. They can tell you who I was in the past, and I need to connect with my new teammates. And that's just one community that he's going to have to connect with and prove himself to.
Okay.
Yeah, punitive actions can only take, it really just takes the pain away of the immediate situation, right? They don't, doesn't help make things better going forward. So I'm all for that as well. Proactive ways to give back, we'll say, and correct. But it is, I mean, how do we know that his college years wasn't what, you know, what wasn't what helped him change who he is as a person, you know, to change his belief systems already?
And another, you know, problem in the workplace, you may have someone who is the rock star salesperson. And if that person commits a problem, you know, does something that runs afoul of the rules, the company is going to say, do we really want to let this person go, versus the newest employee who does something and can easily be fired. And that is not a standard that ultimately I think works for everybody and is sustainable. So we have to really think these things through with what we respond to.
Brian on Twitter, who's a small business owner, says, Evan, I passed on a candidate partly due to a questionable social media account. And in a bind months later, they applied again and I hired them. Turned out to be an incredible employee, and I will not make judgments like that ever again. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
I think if the person looks good in a resume and a cover letter and all of that, and you check and you see something on social media that doesn't sit right with you, what's wrong with having a conversation about that or talking about your value system in your place of employment and asking that person if they agree with that, if they feel the same way, and then asking the question, okay, I need to tell you, I looked at your social media and there are a couple things that really turned me off. And, you know, I want to talk about it because I want to make sure that you're a good fit.
All right. Let's get back to the phones, because we've got a lot of different angles that we want to hit before the end of the hour. A lot of good stuff here. John in Rochester next. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Evan. Yeah, you know, you're talking about Josh Allen. I was reading Sports Illustrated a number of months ago, and they had an interview with Josh Rosen, who was a better prospect from UCLA. And just before the draft, Allen came out with some really big, bad anti-Trump stuff, I think through social media and also through interviews. And I think when they picked Allen over Josh Rosen, who was available, that was a shock to most people. Rosen was the better quarterback. I maintain that possibly the Bills ownership didn't want an anti-Trumper.
You're right. The big pro-fracking, pro-energy Pegulas are definitely looking at their anti-Trump people. Come on.
I'll tell you, when I read the article in Sports Illustrated a number of months ago, this was before he made the anti-Trump stance on social media, he was bashing Trump in Sports Illustrated. And I'll tell you, as a football fan, I didn't want him in Buffalo, although I'll tell you, I would have taken him over Josh Allen, even though I don't like the guy because he's an anti-Trumper.
Okay, well,
and I think that could have played into it.
Yeah, well, I don't, John. Thanks. There were four quarterbacks in the mix for top pick of the draft, and the NFL has a wide range of reasons for thinking about all of them. Josh Rosen, who you thought got he got passed over, or Josh Allen got favored for anti-Trump views. Josh Rosen did just fine, man. He went top 10. Four quarterbacks went top 10. Nobody got passed over for Donald Trump in this draft. I think white guys, Trump or pro-Trump or anti-Trump, are doing just fine in sports. You haven't called about Kaepernick, though, John. But I'm curious to know if you'd want Colin Kaepernick to be a third-string quarterback on the Buffalo Bills. Anyway, let's get back to the subject at hand. Thank you, John, as always. I want to ask Scott Maloof a couple quick questions here, because we had a listener want to know if an employer can say, look, we're going to hire you. We don't like your past social media, so we'd like to control your social media account going forward. We'd like to essentially own it or manage it, that you can still have it. We're going to hire you, but we're in charge of social media now if you keep the account the same. Can they do that?
I would say at the very 50,000 foot level, in theory, that might be okay. But I think in practice, that would be a real problematic thing. And the reason is, you know, whoever runs it, whoever's name is on it, you're going to see joint ownership, and not in the sense of the legal sense, but in the sense of the public is going to expect that. So if someone has assets and resources online that you're really interested in, the better thing is to say, how can we go forward and collaborate and everybody move forward? And the other thing is you want transparency. A lot of organizations will now have, you know, if Evan Dawson is posting the tweet, at the very end, it'll have a couple initials, EV, you know, or ED, I should say, so that people know this is Evan who's posting for this company.
Okay. And I'm curious to know, Lori, if you hear of any employers who are kind of doing the same. Do they? I don't think companies really want to have to manage individual accounts.
I don't think they want to at all. I mean, you know, they might say, hey, shut it down. It might improve your opportunities for advancement. And that's probably another legal issue that Scott could talk about. But certainly there's no one in the employment ranks, I think, that want to monitor and own social media and say, oh, I'm going to put this post out as Lori Enright. There's no one that wants to do that.
That's, you know, it's funny. And that's happened in the past, and that's caused litigation. The one thing I would just say, if you're an employer and you're interested in this, software can be the solution here. There's plenty of programs where we can use to go back and really carefully look at what's in somebody's profile, but also that we can use to manage going forward and post things together as a team and have a really clear policy and set of practices.
All right. One more issue that I want to hit with Scott, which is something that Scott before the program sent me an article, a story that I had missed, by the way, from the Washington Post on a woman who got fired for flipping off President Trump. But this was a different case. Social media is essentially what got her fired, but she did not post a picture of herself. My understanding, and help me with this, Scott, my understanding is this woman did not post a picture of herself flipping off the president. She was riding a bicycle near the presidential motorcade and just decided she saw, oh, that's President Trump's motorcade. Well, I'm going to flip the bird because I don't like him. And somebody riding behind her took a picture of it happening.
Correct.
Posted it. It went super viral.
It was a journalist who posted
it,
I believe.
Okay. And it goes viral, and her employer didn't like it, and she gets fired. And she's actually suing under interesting grounds, which we can get to in a moment. But first of all, is there any recourse for her? Because she could say, look, I'm not the one who posted this picture. Come on.
Mm-hmm. So that's a real challenge. I would say this. The couple things that she might look at, and the case is in Virginia, so Virginia's law is going to differ, is first of all, you'll look at the contract. Do you have a contract with your employer? The vast majority of people are at will, meaning the employer can fire you for no reason or fire you for any reason as long as that reason isn't a discriminatory or illegal reason. So first of all, she's got to look, do I have a contract? Secondly, is there a First Amendment or free expression protection if it's a government employer? Third, we have some here. It's called off-duty laws. So she may say, hey, this was off-duty conduct. It's covered. And then she's making some allegations under Virginia law. So those are the big three that I would look at, you know, for her. And then finally, I guess it would be code of conducts and things like that. The one allegation she did make in the article, and you might have seen that, is to say, well, there was a fellow employee who had some posts my employer didn't like, and he was made to take them down. He was not terminated. So it sounds like some of her claim may be based on the idea that I was treated differently than he was for the exact same kind of problem. The public image of the company is being harmed by a social media post. He got to fix it. I got fired. And so she could say, you know, maybe that's because of a woman or something like that.
The company apparently was concerned about possible governmental recourse, loss of job contracting. So I guess, yeah. So I don't know. How do we expect this one to go? Future cases like this, Scott.
This is going to be a tough one, I think, for her. Again, I'm not cognizant of Virginia law in these issues, but it's not as if someone from the government stepped in and said, company, you're going to lose this $10 million contract unless you fire this person. That aspect seems to be, based on the facts that were in the article, a little bit speculative. You know, the company said, we've got a reputation, we have to maintain it. And I would flip it around. You know, what if she had done that and made an obscene gesture to, you know, the Premier of Canada, you know, to Trudeau, and the company said, we sell to Canada all the time, you know? Would they still then people say she should be fired?
Sure. Okay. And the last quick one for you here is, if she, let's say she's watching the State of the Union in her home in the living room, and she's flicking off the television, mm-hmm. and someone takes a picture through her window and posts mm-hmm. that, versus if she's riding a bicycle in public and does it. Because mm-hmm. I think the argument, her argument is, look, I didn't post this on social. Mm-hmm. You know, this goes viral. I'm not the one who posted it. But she was in public riding a bicycle, mm-hmm. and so technically, you know, this going viral is sort of her own fault. Whereas if someone was spying on her in private, there's mm-hmm. maybe something different.
Evan, this feels like law school. You missed your calling.
I think it's interesting.
No. On that one, real quick. So, yeah, no expectation of privacy in public versus, you know, if someone were shooting through the window, she may say, well, I have an expectation of privacy. Two twists on that, though. One, there was a case where a photographer took a picture of her. She was in a hijab. The Washington Post used her picture. And they said, look, this is a newsworthy story, and they were able to use that picture. She couldn't bring a claim on that. So whereas she might have said, hey, Starbucks is a private place. You, photographer, were not allowed to come there and take a picture of me. But that case ultimately went nowhere. But also, there's a second case out of London where a photographer was taking pictures into people's apartments, and they had these floor-to-ceiling windows. And again, the expectation of privacy was very small. So I think the lesson for everybody is, close the drapes.
Very good. Lori Enright, last 20 seconds here. As a placement director for AP Professionals, can you just offer some final thoughts when you, if you know anybody, your child, your friend, applying for a job, what do you want them to keep in mind on this subject?
That everything on social media is fair game for people to see, and it could lose you an opportunity going forward. Yeah. And clean it up.
And you've seen it.
I've seen it several times.
Well, clean it up. And by the way, she's a mom too. So she, you have the advantage of saying, I know employers, I work with them. But also, I've got a 21-year-old. I know what it's like. Good luck to you and your family on
thank
that.
Thank you.
I know it's stressful. As always, Lori Enright, AP professional, Scott Maloof, who is an attorney whose practice is focused on the intersection of social media and the law. Online, where?
You can find me on Twitter at Scott Maloof, on www.scottmaloof.com, and on LinkedIn on Social Media Attorney.
M-A-L-O-U-F. Thanks,
yep.
Scott.
Thank you.
More connections coming up.